Good morning and welcome to Just Ask. My name is Tara Thompson. I am one of the pharmacists here at Innovation Compounding Pharmacy. And we have Heather Quayle, who is a nurse practitioner and SANE Women's Health nurse practitioner with the Show Center. And we are the hosts of Just Ask. So what Just Ask is a panel of healthcare providers and with a specialty in expert opinion on sexual health. So we want this to be a place where patients can come ask questions, have a place to find information and hear about the different topics that are going on that they may not feel comfortable talking to their doctor about, but also just to bring awareness to things that are going on month to month. So I wanted to go over a little bit about what we do as a advocacy group and also talk a little bit about our initiatives here at Just Ask. So I'm going to get those up now. One of our initiatives is to promote the understanding and advocacy of conversations surrounding both men and women's sexual health, wellness, and dysfunction. And we utilize multidisciplinary experts in the field, including medical, pharmacy, pelvic floor, and counseling. Another initiative is to debunk any myths and taboos that surround sexual dysfunction and other intimate topics while providing a safe and confidential space for conversation. The last is to advocate for an evidence-based approach to educating members of the community and other clinicians on sexual health issues. These can include couples and intimacy, women's integrative healthcare approaches, functional medicine, lifestyle health, intimacy and cancer, male sexual health, sexual pain, pelvic floor, transgender, and crisis medicine. Our mission is to create a healthcare platform dedicated to providing evidence-based information by a team of sexual health experts in order for individuals to make informed and optimal sexual health decisions and to learn and understand the issues that surround sexual dysfunction. So today we are showcasing, particularly being the month of June, showcasing Pride Month. So we have an expert in the field of LGBT medicine and we are going to introduce Dr. Michelle in a second. But before we do that, I wanted to show and tell how viewers could ask questions. So this event is not live. So once we do post this event on various social media outlets, you are encouraged to ask any questions. That's the purpose of the panel, is to ask any questions that you may be embarrassed or unfamiliar about, or that our show may arise any questions in you regarding the particular topic. So you can send those publicly on our Facebook page. You can send them privately through a chat or through a message to us, and we will get back to you on those answers to those questions. So again, we encourage any and all questions. This is a place to fill non-judgmental area. It is a free and open space to ask any questions that you might have. So that is the whole purpose of our panel, and we hope that you enjoy our show today. So like I said, my name is Tara. I'm a pharmacist, and I have a particular passion for sexual health and medicine. And then my very amazing colleague, Heather Quayle, if you want to tell a little bit about yourself, Heather, and then introduce Michelle and anything I forgot. So,
well, welcome. We are so excited to have you. My name's Dr. Heather Quayle. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. I'm a women's health nurse practitioner and a sexual assault nurse examiner. I'm the founder of the Show Center, the Sexual Health Optimization and Wellness Center, and I am in the process of opening my practice, which will open next month, which I'm very excited about. And I'm also, my passion project is working in trauma and human trafficking, and I created the medical component of a human trafficking center in Georgia. So I'm so excited to have my esteemed colleague, friend, my mentor in a lot of ways around LGBTQ health. Her name is Michelle Sariev. She received her master's in nursing from Georgia State University in 2012. She's certified by the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. She has a bachelor's degree in nursing from Emory, as well as a bachelor's in English from the University of Georgia. And she's practiced as a nurse and a nurse practitioner in Atlanta since 2006. Her areas of interest include preventative medicine, wellness, gender-affirming care, HIV prevention and treatment, and she is a staunch advocate for eliminating disparities in the LGBTQ healthcare. She teaches a human sexuality course at Emory School of Nursing, and she is amazing at that, by the way. Awesome, awesome course. She's a certified HIV specialist through the American Academy of HIV Medicine. She was the 2019 recipient of Emory's Outstanding Ally of the Year Award. At AAHIVM, she is the co-chair of the National NP Committee. She serves on the Georgia Steering Committee for Sexual Health Curriculum Development Group. And with AAHIVM, she's on the National Board of Directors. Pre-pandemic, which we all say pre and post-pandemic now, she likes to spend a lot of her free time traveling, writing, enjoying the amazing restaurant scene, and lately just a love of cooking and walking and enjoying nature and everything around. So without further ado, I'm so excited to have my esteemed colleague, Michelle. Take it from there, my friend.
Wow, thank you so much. I really appreciate y'all having me on today. I'm really happy to be participating in this. My name is Michelle Soria, Atlanta, Georgia. My pronouns are she and her. And I just wanted to start by saying happy Pride. This is my favorite month. I'm really sad that we're not able to have our parades and our big celebrations, but there's so much going on online that there's lots of ways to celebrate. I wanted to go over a couple of vocabulary, and address the fact that we do include our pronouns with our introductions. I think it's really important to do that because not everybody uses the pronouns that you would assume that they use based on their appearance. And so this becomes particularly important when you think about things in terms of the binary or a non-binary world. In gender-affirming care, we really like to try to stay away from thinking about things in the binary of male and female, because there are some people who identify as not completely male, not completely female, something in between, and oftentimes their pronouns are they and them. So you're hearing a lot more of that in the in pop culture and in media, but it's really important that we create this open, safe space. And you know, people who are cisgender, who include their pronouns, make that sort of normalized. What I mean by cisgender is that I identify as the gender that I was assigned when I was born. So when I was born, I was assigned female, and I do identify as female gender. People who are trans or non-binary do not identify as the gender that they were assigned at birth. And so those are just a couple of housekeeping things to mention right here, right off the bat. Another term that sometimes people get tripped up on that we use a lot when talking about LGBTQ health is queer. Queer is a reclaimed term that is an umbrella term that basically encompasses a lot of different things in sexual orientation as well as gender identity. So you may hear us talk about that. Don't want to go too into pronouns because we could do an entire, vocabulary, because we could do an entire show about that. But hopefully some of the resources that we'll talk about will give you somewhere to go if you have more questions, and then maybe a show later, you know, in the future.
Wonderful. And I also want to put, when Michelle gives us all our different resources, we can make a document and we can put it out on Just Ask as well too. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your story. How did you get into caring for LGBTQ? What pulled at your heartstrings, and what kind of got you started in that?
Well, thank you for asking that, because I think that sometimes people are intimidated by LGBTQ care because they feel like they have to be part of the community or, you know, have to have had a lot of training in that area. And honestly, I got into it mainly because the very first job that I got out of grad school as a nurse practitioner was in a clinic that had a huge population of LGBTQ community members. So I sort of fell into it. That being said, I've always been an ally. I was into theater in high school, so not to stereotype, but because of that, I've definitely been an ally of the community since I was very young. Very fortunate to have wonderful parents who created a safe and loving home environment for me to really be able to explore that kind of stuff, and really, and they really supported that. So I think it was partially nurture and definitely some nature, but then falling into a clinic where, you know, I had to educate myself really quickly because I did not get much education in school about LGBTQ health in particular. So, and I think that's the case for a lot of providers, unfortunately, which is sort of what leads to some of the disparities that we see in this community, especially when it comes to sexual health.
Can you kind of, you mentioned about like a lot of our webinar that we do here is for patients, but we also have a lot of healthcare providers that watch it too. So you mentioned not a lot of resources. What are some of your go-tos that you would recommend for starters and if they're not getting it in school?
Yeah, so one of the number one helpful resources is the Fenway Institute. This is a clinic in Boston, Massachusetts. They have a healthcare clinic there, but they also have this institute online that has tons of information. And they have webinars, they have lots of education, they have basically kind of like a textbook.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Sexual transgender health. This is a wonderful resource for people. And so that's a big one. For transgender health, the University of California at San Francisco has an amazing Center for Excellence in Transgender Health. And this is my go-to. I use it all the time, very much like for providers who are familiar with UpToDate. It's kind of like an UpToDate of transgender health. And so they're constantly updating it. And it's for primary care. So that makes it really, really easy for primary care providers and even acute care providers who have questions to go to that. It's very well organized and laid out.
Is it a subscription like UpToDate, or are these free or?
Okay. Yeah, the Fenway Institute has tons of free stuff online, and the UCSF Center for Excellence in Transgender Health, both of these are free. They're coming soon. The AAHIVM, the American Academy of HIV Medicine, is going to have a sexual health curriculum. We're in the process of developing that. And so we're going to do a certificate program with that. So that's going to be really, really exciting as well. And we already have a lot of resources on our website that are free for the general public.
That's awesome. So will that certificate be for healthcare providers? Can patients look into, like, what are good sources? So now, since we're on sources, let's dive a little into patients too. Like, what are sources for them?
So there's a lot out there. One thing that I wanted to mention is there's another book. I'm a big book fan. There's
Thank
this
you.
Book called Trans Bodies, Trans Selves. And this is very much devoted to the transgender community. It's written, edited, it's several different essays, all by transgender people. There's a lot in there about sexual health as well. And I think it's good for the entire community. I think it's great for cis people too, and hetero people. I think also some other places that people can find information is they can find like support groups online. I mean, obviously we use the online community so much. So that's a great place. There is a podcast called Exclusively Inclusive. My colleague Erin Everett does this podcast. It is wonderful. And it's really kind of like y'all's format. It's really focused on community and it's information and education for community, but it's great for providers too.
Awesome. So I'm just going to dive in and start delving questions at you. So if you have someone that comes in and they feel like they can't talk to you about sex, or what do you do? How do you gauge that they want to talk to you about something they've already identified that maybe they do fall on the spectrum of LGBTQ, or maybe they even haven't identified it to you quite yet, but you can tell something's is that they want to talk about? How do you bring that up, and how do you make your patients feel comfortable?
So it's really all about building rapport and creating a safe space. I believe it's so important to do that from the moment they walk in the door. So we really model for our entire staff and do a lot of staff training to make sure that people are well educated. And so we create that safe space from the moment they walk in the door. And then when we're in the room having a conversation, and if I sort of the scenario you're talking about, they're kind of skirting around it, but I can tell that they want to talk about it. I will always bring up the fact that I feel like sexual health is such a key component to overall health and wellness. And it really plays into me explaining what I do and how I do it as a family nurse practitioner, and how I believe in holistic health and, you know, caring for the entire body, mental health, physical health, and all of it. And so it really makes it easy to bring sexual health into it. And so just kind of creating that space.
So for patients that are kind of exploring things, what are some of the things they can look for a safe, like a safe environment that's open? And what are some things they can look for?
So I think clinics who do have websites oftentimes will have little hints on their website. And usually it's not super obvious. It's not like you have to have like rainbow flags all over your homepage to make to explain that you're a safe space, but maybe having, you know, some information or include as part of your services that you provide LGBTQ health. When people walk into the waiting room, having magazines that are representative of the community that you serve, having all sorts of the education materials that you have, like in the bathrooms, the posters that you have up, have trans bodies on those posters, have a good diversity of things that are out and about so that people know that, you know, you're a safe space. Another thing that people can watch out for is, and advocate for at their practice, if they don't happen to be doing it, is a space in intake paperwork to put pronouns or to include sexual orientation and gender identity. And so, you know, don't be afraid. I hesitate to tell people, a community, to advocate for themselves always. I mean, I don't want them to feel like they always are the ones who have to be educating us, but don't be afraid to do that, because some providers really do have their heart in the right place and they want to be open like this, but they just don't know that they're not doing it yet. We don't know what we don't know, you know?
So in your experience, since you've brought that up, so what's the best way to tell a patient, or to, like, if you botch up your pronouns or you say something like, what's an all-encompassing way to say, like, I want to be here for you, I want to provide, but you may have to teach me a little bit too. Like, how do they feel about that?
This has been an evolution for me, because when I first came into practice, I became a nurse practitioner in 2012, and there was very little out there and I'm going to kind of focus on transgender health here, just because it's an easy area to use as an example in this case in particular. So I would tell patients, you know, please tell me what resources you have for me, or what have you learned. The community is extraordinarily resilient, and for many, many, many years, they had to really care for themselves. They had to find their hormones online, internationally. They really kind of took care of themselves in a lot of ways, because there just weren't providers out there. Now, this has changed extraordinarily since then, and there's a lot more information and there's a lot more resources out there. And there's also a move for providers, for us to not put the onus on the patients to educate us. They're coming to us as healthcare providers and experts. They want our opinions. They want us to be educated. And so what I've sort of evolved into is I try to tell people, you know, I go to conferences, I keep up, I really, really, I read, I use, and I tell them the resources that I use. But because of the resilience of this community, sometimes there's new and emerging treatments that are coming across that I may not have seen yet. So please feel free to always bring those up to me. And I tell them, I'll either, you know, say, oh yeah, I've heard about that, let's talk more about it. Or I'll say, oh, I haven't heard about that, I'll look into it, I will vet it for you in my trusted evidence-based resources, so that we can continue your care and your regimen in a very safe and medically accurate way. Awesome. So I try to kind of have a balance.
So we talk about all things sexual health, and you're a you teach human sexuality. But what does that mean for LGBTQ? Is it just STIs? Does it evolve more? Like, I know in my sexual health world, my area is more female dominated. So I do a lot of pelvic floor. It deals with like hypoactive sexual desire disorder, different things of that nature. Are those some of the same concerns that fall across the LGBTQ gamut too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really a population that has been ignored in a lot of these areas. But they're the same kind of issues come up. STIs are extraordinarily important, and we do address those. And, you know, some populations, you know, especially lesbians, have been kind of left out in a lot of ways. They're statistically speaking less likely to have cervical cancer screening. And so we definitely want to always have a focus on that. But if you think about one of the things that has come out since I've been in practice has been PrEP. Pre-exposure prophylaxis for prevention of HIV. And this has been, you know, it's HIV along with U equals U, making sure that people who are living with HIV have undetectable viral loads. But what has happened, and what I kind of realized early on, was that it has really opened up sex and sexuality for a lot of people who have been terrified. People who live through the AIDS epidemic in the 80s live in fear of HIV, who are not living with HIV. And when PrEP came out, I started seeing people all of a sudden have these like amazing revolutions of healthy sex life, either with their monogamous partner or not. And so it has been a really, really positive experience for people. You know, and we always have to talk about other safer sex practices so that we prevent all the STIs and, you know, along with that. But it has just been a really, really positive thing. So that's something. I think also with trans folks who are on hormone regimens, a lot of times there can be a lot of pelvic floor issues. There can be a lot of pain problems that can come with some of the hormones that we use in the HRT regimens for transgender people. So absolutely, there's tons of sexual health concerns for this that probably mirror the same for hetero cis people.
Yeah, I do see it a little bit with my lesbian population that I take care of, and they still have some of those same pelvic health. There's still that little bit of that desire discrepancy a bit. Can you talk about some of the challenges maybe that same-sex couples face kind of due to lack of education or access to this information? Can you dive into that just a bit more?
Yeah, I think sometimes there's not an understanding of, like, so with like lesbian couples that you can still have spread. It's much less likely, like HIV, they're very, very low risk of HIV. But you can still spread STIs with toys. There is still a risk of exposure to HPV with, you know, fingers or any sort of insertive play. And so just kind of talking about those things with folks, because a lot of times no one's ever talked to them about it. Also, like contraception counseling is very important, even with lesbian couples, because what people don't realize is sometimes lesbians are not offered birth control because they, you know, they're not going to get pregnant. But birth control has so many other advantages other than just preventing pregnancy. And so offering that, and then also opening a space for kind of family planning. Like, do you plan on having children? A lot of providers never talk to lesbians, gay men, bisexual people. They just make the assumption that they're never going to want to have children when that's just not the case.
Right. And how do you broach that topic with patients? Is it in your patient intakes? Do you wait until they get back there? Talk a little, like, are your intakes, you think, different for this population as opposed to cisgender?
I probably, yeah. And so go again, using transgender patients as an example, whenever we're starting a regimen, so if someone comes to me and they haven't previously been on hormones and they're going to be transitioning, one of the things we talk about pre-initiation is fertility preservation, and if that's something they're interested in. And so, yeah, that's, you know, I'm not talking to every single patient that I first meet with about, you know, their fertility goals in the future. That being said, I do try to be very inclusive of people who, even like heterosexual women who come in, and, you know, I don't assume that they're all planning in a space for, you know, it's okay if you don't want to have kids, because I think some providers are always thinking about that and thinking about like when you start your family. Well, not everybody wants to start a family. And so I think if I can just say a plug for providers being more knowledgeable about LGBTQ health, it makes you such a much better provider for all patients, because you just really think in this very, very inclusive way. I kind of got off the subject, I know, on that one, but sorry.
No, that's okay. I kind of make it all about patient and provider. So jumping back into patients, what are some of the things and advice you have for patients on just becoming more confident and comfortable in their own sexuality?
So that's a tough question. It's something that I really encourage people to have a lot of patience with and be gentle on themselves with. I think practice is awesome. It's fun, and it's definitely helps you become more comfortable. I think individual and group therapy can be extraordinarily helpful. I really try to explain to people that I don't think that therapy is just for people who have mental illness. I think everybody can use therapy.
Yes.
And so I think that's a really, really good way to do it, because, you know, a lot of people grew up not ever talking about sex, and there is a lot of shame surrounding sex. And so we have a lot to kind of, you know, this, Heather.
Yes, I always call it my hashtag sex in the South, total taboo. We don't talk about it. We're terrible about it here.
Yep. And so I think just like talking about it every chance you can get and just exposing yourself to it, it really, really normalizes it. And then also not being afraid to make mistakes or ask awkward questions. I have in one of my presentations, I have a slide of, it's one of my favorite pictures from a trip I took to Cuba a few years ago with a group of yoga students. And we were trying to do this like yoga pose on the beach, like where we're all kind of like connected, and we fell. And it's got this beautiful backdrop. And we're all laughing hysterically. And I just really encourage people, don't be afraid to feel silly, because that helps us get through that awkwardness. And it makes us so much more comfortable. And it really, really enhances overall health. If I can have a take home, addressing sexual health issues will help with overall health.
Yeah. So I mean, definitely addressing it with providers, friends. How do you recommend talking about it with their partners? Like, what if they're new to this and they're like, okay, I'm new. How do you talk about it?
Yeah. You know, just kind of bringing it up at a time when, you know, that not always in bed, sometimes make it part of your normal conversation when you're, you know, having dinner or having your coffee in the morning, kind of bring it up then. Maybe suggesting if you come across a podcast or a book or something that is maybe talking about some of the things, and then just really knowing yourself and knowing where you find pleasure and helping your partner, because your partner presumably wants to pleasure you, and then being open to things that they may want to do that they may not have brought up before.
Yeah. So dive into my favorite thing. I mean, no one wants to talk about the big M word, but masturbation. It's so important. Find out what works for yourself. And that way you can talk about your likes, your dislikes. I mean, I can't encourage it enough. Maybe you can encourage that. I talk about it and people look at me with 10 eyes, because it's such a taboo word.
Well, there's another clinic, Callen Lord in New York City, that they do some wonderful work in the LGBTQ world. And they published very early on during COVID a sexual health for yourself kind of pamphlet. That's wonderful. And so they were really, you know, sexual health in the time of COVID.
Yes.
And talking about that. And what a great time for people to explore themselves and explore their pleasures.
Absolutely. And I had a really good psychologist friend of mine actually have a whole entire podcast, Instagram stuff around just self-exploration. In the time of pandemic and we're self-isolated, it's a perfect time to explore yourself, not feel like you're so alone. And I'm going to say it out here, and I know Michelle's going to back me on this one. It is okay. You should be touching yourself. You should know what pleasures you, and you should be comfortable with getting to a place where you can experience that, because a lot of times you can't expect your partner to know about you if you don't know about yourself.
Right.
And I think
you see a lot of that here from, you know, even as a pharmacist, from a counseling standpoint, trying to counsel patients regarding inserting a vaginal suppository or putting a labial cream or a vestibular cream on, and they feel very uncomfortable touching themselves, back to the, you know, sex in the South being, you know, taboo sometimes because of the Bible Belt or whatever it might be. But once you don't realize, once you open that door and you open that gate for questions, the patient really, or the client or whomever, really has a lot to say and ask. And I feel like one of the reasons we even started Just Ask in the first place was because between Heather and I, and even the people that we've had on the show in the past, like, we've just noticed so much demand for a place where people could just ask questions, talk about it. I mean, even as a provider, you see a patient walks through the door, might be timid at first, but once you ask that leading question and you open that door, the floodgates open and they spill it all. And it's almost like you've gained their trust. And so I think that Just Ask, we wanted it to kind of be kind of a platform around that, to where people could ask anything, because we know the questions are in everyone's minds. It's just gathering up the courage to ask it and to realize that it's very normal, and it's not a dumb question. It's not a silly question. It's not a crazy question. Like, trust me, we've heard it before, and we'll hear it again. So if a patient has, or a client, or someone out there that has a question about something, you know, that's why we're here. So we really appreciate that. So sorry, just my two cents.
Do you encourage a lot of your patients to bring their partners in to have that, to be there for their visits? Maybe that kind of helps the communication start?
Yes, absolutely. Especially pre-COVID. Now, I think if I wanted to have a consultation with, and if more importantly, the patient wanted to have a consultation with their partner or partners, if they have more than one, then I would probably suggest a telehealth visit so that we can all kind of get together on that. But yeah, I think that's a great way to sort of open up the topic. And it's also a safe space maybe people feel safer bringing things up that they might not have felt okay with at home. I always talk to my trans patients, before and throughout their medical transition, about changes that are taking place as far as sexual health. So I always bring up the fact that testosterone may very well significantly increase their libido. And so their partner or partners should be aware of that. And, you know, I kind of check in with them and just say, have y'all talked about that at all? For trans women or trans feminine folks who are potentially suppressing testosterone quite a bit, I talk to them about how this could decrease libido. But I also always bring up the fact that in my experience, and this is anecdotal because we don't have a lot of data about it, but most people who get on a stable regimen of feminizing hormones actually have an increase in libido because they're feeling more self-actualized than they ever have before. And that congruence that they feel on the inside with how they, you know, look and sort of the chemistry of it all is really, really great for them.
So is it a myth or is it true? Men having sex with men, is it just constant libido 24/7? Do they have desire mismatch or discrepancy like I see between heterosexual couples? I see it in lesbian couples, but What about in men having sex with men?
100%. It's exactly the same. There are, you know, there's some people who have a huge libido and some people who just don't. There's medications that people can be on. It's just because you're a gay man does not mean that you just want to have sex all the time, for sure.
Yes. Thanks for debunking that myth, because I think we just totally make that assumption like, oh, they're fine, so I don't need to ask that question.
Yeah, that's another example of how PrEP really changed things for people who are in discordant relationships. And what I mean by that is one partner is living with HIV and the other is not. There is a huge amount of fear around sex. Mm-hmm. In that case, even when people are on treatment and undetectable viral loads and all of that, when the partner could go on PrEP, it really, really helped their sexual health.
Do you encourage them to go to therapy with that too? Like, does that kind of come in that mix just to kind of help break down some of that?
Absolutely. I do. That's very important. And I think anyone who's newly diagnosed with HIV, I try to get them in with therapy and mental health specialist just to kind of help them through sort of the impact of such a significant diagnosis that, you know, no longer a death sentence. We can definitely treat it. We can get you undetectable. We can be, you know, very, very healthy. But it is hugely impactful, obviously.
Exactly. And probably some sex therapist in that mix too, or do you just specifically use mental health? Do you use a combination of both? Because I know that.
Yeah, we've got some great resources here in Atlanta. And so I've collected a list over the years of people, my go-tos.
And we'll probably get some of those from you so we can share them with our patients that watch, because sometimes when you're diving down this, you just don't know where to start or where to look.
Oh, and I've talked to so many people in the LGBTQ community who have had such terrible experiences with therapists who just didn't really understand or, you know, the special needs that might be out there.
Exactly. And I find too that once you kind of make that connection with just one, especially the transgender, and you just let them know you're here from them, you're listening, you'll give them the resources, they're going to tell all their friends, and then they're going to keep coming back to you over and over because you've just developed a trust that they haven't seen. Do you find that pretty often in your care?
Absolutely. One of the things that informs my passion for this line, I mean, you know, I'm a nurse practitioner, a family nurse practitioner. I am hugely passionate about prevention, overall health and wellness for all people. But I have one of the things that informs my passion for the LGBTQ community and sexual health was the Lambda Legal report that came out, I think, in 2009 called When Healthcare Isn't Caring. And that's available online. This is a great resource for both providers and patients. And it shows, there was a survey done, and it basically showed that, you know, upwards to 89% of respondents who were transgender said that they didn't feel like they had their healthcare provider had the knowledge to really take care of them. Used harsh or abusive language, the percentages were huge. And so I just think that there's been a real, we've really haven't served this community and the healthcare communities are in healthcare. And so I just think that's really important.
Awesome. I'm going to totally jump over because we've talked a little bit about just safety. We've talked a little bit about PrEP. Let's dive back into some more of the uncomfortable, because they're going to get the uncomfortable things they want to hear. Talk to us a little bit about just toys and devices and safety considerations. How does it look different maybe for lesbians, gay couples, transgender, cleanliness around them? What do they need to take different precautions?
Yeah, so great question that I think doesn't always get addressed. Definitely cleaning toys is very important, usually just with soap and water. I don't think there's any kind of magic to it. Going to a good sex shop can be a huge help for folks because the people who work there are extraordinarily knowledgeable. Yes. And passionate about educating customers. One of the big things is with anal play, having like butt plugs or whatever sort of insertive devices, you have to make sure that it's a graduated device, so that it does, because the rectal vault will basically suction things in. And you hear those stories about people being in the ER with being stuck. That can be obviously very uncomfortable, not only from a mental health perspective, but also physically. So there are toys that are specifically made to not allow that to happen. So that's
usually with a handle, right? That's kind of what I've been told, is find things that have some sort of handle so they can't get sucked right in.
Yep. Or just like, like a lip to it, basically. What else can I tell you
about? Go ahead, Tara.
Oh no, I was just thinking too, like just having an awareness of the anatomy that is, it's different females and males. I mean, people may not know, but obviously females and males are different, but anal versus vaginal versus rec. I mean, there's just so many different, it's different tubes and there's different things, can sphincters that, I mean, just from an anatomy standpoint, things get taken, can get sucked up one way and pushed out another. So just having a good knowledge too, and having a source that you can go to kind of know which toys are specifically for, you know, what you're looking for.
The importance of lube. Cannot underestimate the importance of lube.
Yes. And Heather and I, we actually have a lot of resources for toys and lubes and that type of thing, depending on what you're looking for, water-based, oil-based, natural, synthetic, we can also add those onto the show as well, so that our listeners can have a place to click on if they're interested in looking at that kind of thing.
I would love to have that.
Can you jump in and say if there's, like, do they need to be more protective with, like, condoms or dental dams or things if they use silicone devices versus plastic devices or things in that nature? We hear about those sometimes, or that lubes can kind of degrade certain types of things that they use.
You know, I'm not that knowledgeable about that, other than the fact that I think silicone's pretty safe with, you know, condoms and dental dams and lube and all of that. So that's usually what I recommend. I also, this is a little bit off that topic, but speaking of silicone, I'll, for cock rings that people use, men or people who have penises sometimes use those. A lot of times I'll recommend those versus metal, because sometimes the metal can get stuck on and the silicone has some ply to them. Also female condoms, terrible binary name of that product, but condoms that are used for people with vaginas, there's a ring, a pliable ring on the inside, for anyone who's never seen one. That ring can be removed and used as a cock ring as well. And it, once you remove that ring, that condom can be used for anal sex. So that can be really helpful for folks. And so just being creative and being and you know, talking to patients about all that kind of stuff is really important.
I don't know if you're familiar, but I know in my area, and I know Tara may have an example because I don't have mine in front of me, but there's something called O-Nut. And I know that for people that have pelvic pain, which we use it in our world, whether, no matter how you identify, but it's a graduated silicone device to kind of help with how deep penetration is going to be. And so that may also even be helpful to use for men that have sex with men, and that's something that they're getting used to or haven't done before.
Mm-hmm. And I know we touched on it a little bit earlier about patients who are on hormone therapy, whether they're trans or you know, male to female, female to male, regardless, on hormone therapy can kind of cause particular issues in a female, you know, causing the vaginal dryness, they're trying to cut estrogen and that type of thing. So that's a good conversation piece too, to, like Michelle said, to expect some of those changes sexually. However, people don't always realize that as a physician or as a provider, or as a pharmacist, you may be speaking to somebody who actually is having issues because of the hormone therapy and the lubes, how important the lubes might be, and that these toys, you know, there may be some pain involved, but you know, I know, especially as a pharmacist making compounds for pelvic pain and pelvic health, particular analgesics and that type of thing as well, that, you know, that's a very real conversation, that just knowing what audience you're talking to and getting them to, you know, not be shy or scared to mention those types of things as well. And then the O-Nut, we did see that particular product, in which is amazing for determining how far penetration goes in, because sometimes for males or females could be too painful too far. And so just putting those graduated cylinders on to make it shorter and not as deep is very, very helpful. And I don't have an example, but we will post the link to that as well, because that is a very, very creative and interesting and very functional tool that has helped a lot. So.
Well, as we start, I try to keep us to about that 45 to 60 minutes. So as we kind of start wrapping up, one of the last things I want Michelle to kind of leave us with is, like, I want to kind of end with it being Pride Month and everything. Like, give me some examples of how patients can be more body positive and how we can kind of promote that as providers as well.
That is the take home, right? Body positivity is so important. I remember one time when I first started doing talks and kind of what led me to teaching the human sexual a regular guest speaker in that course with the previous faculty that taught it. And then she would also have me come back in her, I guess it was the BSN psychology or mental health nursing class. When she was talking about sexual health, she would have me come in and talk about transgender health. And, you know, we used to really try to separate gender identity from sexual orientation because they're so different. And so I always kind of wondered, why are you having me talk about this during your sexual health lecture? And then I realized, until we are comfortable talking about sex and accepting all different kinds of sex and accepting the fact that there are a lot of questions surrounding sex, we're never going to be comfortable talking about gender. That is the thing, is that shame again with the sex that comes with it, that makes it so difficult for us to understand they, them pronouns or the non-binary and all of that. So I think with that comes body positivity. And I think personally or individually, people can meditate. I think that can be very, very helpful. Self-affirmation, just constant self-affirming language and thought processes, cognitive behavioral therapy can be really, really helpful. I think also rejecting anyone who is not creating a space for body positivity is huge. So if you have a provider that's not giving you what you need in that area, find a new provider, because there will be somebody out there who can help you. And you know, if you're not comfortable telling that previous provider while you're leaving and they're in person, that's fine, but maybe send them a letter and let them know.
Absolutely.
And so just that, I think that's probably the biggest thing I could say.
I think too, just body positivity around our friends and our family. I think that's sometimes really hard issues to delve into. Like, if you're not being accepted where you are the most, you know, I think that leads into it as well.
Absolutely.
And getting and like you said, getting them the mental health they need. A lot of times I hate to always blame it on family, but in my human trafficking world that I do a lot of it kind of surrounds human trafficking, also balances on this LGBTQ. And that's why it's kind of become my little passion project. And it starts at home. It starts at home and some of the things that they're hearing and not being accepted and kind of having them develop a new way, if you will, to accept who they are and love who they are.
Well, and I have to say, I have so much hope for the future, because these kids these days, my goodness, they get it. They understand how important this stuff is and they're demanding it. And so I say, you know, let's lift them up. They can teach us a thing or two about body positivity. And I think the future is bright. So
I 100% agree. Tara, I'm going to jump back to you. I know you have some students with you. Did they come up with some questions?
We were talking a little bit just a second ago about, like, oil-based versus water-based lubricants and how some of them can, the oil-based particularly, can degrade condoms and that type of thing. So, and we have a list of the different ones, but if, you know, if it's men having sex with men, that type of thing, we can, or even men having sex with females, female, we have a list that we can kind of go over each one and talk about the different things. But did you have any other questions? This is their first day. They're so excited. And we just jumped right into it. So, yes. But no, we really, really appreciate you being on here, Michelle. Like, we couldn't have asked for a better panelist to be with us today. And this has been so insightful, even for me as a provider. I feel like as a pharmacist, and Heather as a provider, and whoever the provider that might be watching this, you know, we try to market ourselves and to talk and speak to patients so they get information. But if providers are watching this, I feel like we may have just touched people in a way to get them to change the way they practice, the way they talk, the way their intake forms are. We're getting patients to realize that they don't have to settle for a certain provider who may not know these types of things or include those types of orientations. And this has been so wonderful for every listener. I feel like can take away something from this talk. Even if it's just awareness and knowing that there's all different kinds of people out there and patients, and not one of them is right, wrong, or this, that, and the other. And everybody has needs, both medically, pharmacologically, mentally, that, you know, we can support from all platforms. So we really appreciate you, Michelle, and you have been such a wonderful resource. Those books, I'm very much a touching.
I'm hands-on too.
I got to have the hard copy. So we'll definitely link those there as well so that we can get those out. So patients and providers can include
those.
She's
my go-to. She's amazing. And yes. I've been practicing for a long time, and I learn something new from her every single time I reach out. So when I end with this, I want Michelle to kind of tell us where she works, how people can reach out to her if needed, if she's okay with that. As Tara said, you can reach out to us privately or in our forums, but she's kind of my go-to. And if I can't get you directly to her, I will somehow connect that. But Michelle, please give us your information before we wrap up.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm a nurse practitioner at Thacker, Thompson, and Bernard. We are a primary care office specializing in, well, we have an endocrinologist on staff as well as a HIV specialist who's been in town, Dr. Melanie Thompson. She's huge in the HIV world. You can reach us on our website, although the website's not super active, but it's ttmb.com. Also, we are affiliated with Piedmont. So if you Google my name, my Piedmont website comes up, and you can schedule with me through that. I am accepting new patients currently. I am there Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 5. I see pretty much from around age 10 to 12, probably like 12 on up. You can also call our front desk. The phone number's on the website, but it's 404-874-3102, and just ask to schedule with me. For anyone who is a student at Emory University, I teach my human sexuality class. It's an elective, and it's in the School of Nursing, but it's open to the entire university, and that's each spring. And so keep an eye out for that.
Okay, I have to ask, because I know I'm going to get this question. Do you all take students as preceptors, like to precept them? And what does that look like now with COVID?
You take students. I definitely, since I am instructor at Emory, usually Emory students get the first priority. I also have to say I shamelessly prioritize people who are interested in LGBTQ health. So hopefully we'll be able to start having students again soon. Right now we're not, though, unfortunately.
I know.
Also, I did want to mention that I think I said this before, but I am doing telehealth. And right now they have loosened some of the restrictions on telemedicine. And so I can see new patients via telehealth as well. So if people are sheltering in place or needing to quarantine or just want to have an initial visit via a video visit, we can get that set up.
Awesome. Well, I cannot thank you enough. You're amazing. You know you're my go-to, but everyone else needs to know how amazing she is too.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michelle. So everything we've talked about today, we'll post Michelle's information as well, so that if you're a patient looking for a provider, then you can have her information. She is in Atlanta, but does telehealth in Georgia, I believe. So we can get all that. I did want to bring up just in closing that thank you, Michelle, and thank you, Heather, again. Heather's always such a great leader. She has a wealth of knowledge and information and ask the best questions. So I just love listening to her talk too. But in the month of July, if you follow us, we are actually going to be going over with Dr. Maureen Ryan, who's located up in New York. She's going to be talking about rekindling intimacy after cancer treatment. So it's going to be a really cool show. We're excited to have her too. So without further ado, I will let everyone go, and we really appreciate everyone's time today.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. Y'all have a great day. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks.
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 That was fun.
Oh, you're amazing. Ah. You're so awesome. I'm very excited.